WFAE streaming is funded by Garage Door Guru, providing local comprehensive garage door service for over 12 years, including detailed repairs and door installations, offering fine German-made garage doors. Details, go garagedoorguru.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Those of us of a certain age remember Care well. We remember them from the famous care packages that were first delivered to survivors of World War II and later to others in need. They had public service announcements on TV regularly reminding people to give. But Care is not just about handouts. It is also about eliminating the need for their services by bringing people out of poverty. And they do that in many ways, including the use of technology. CARE says that the very technology that most of us take for granted can transform some of the globe's poorest communities. John Mitchell knows that well. He is the chief operating officer at CARE USA. He'll be in Charlotte tomorrow under the auspices of the World Affairs Council of Charlotte and joins us from Atlanta in advance of that visit. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mike, and thanks to your listeners at WFAE. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you this morning.
You know, poverty has been with us since the dawn of time, and CARE has been fighting poverty every moment since I've been alive, and starting way back in 1945. That's 67 years, and still poverty is with us. You, I'm told, grew up in Kenya and have been working in the field of international relief for more than 30 years. So before we talk about technology and how it can have an impact on those in poverty, talk about what you've seen in terms of global poverty, as well as the impact that CARE has had in those 67 years.
Sure. Thanks, Mike. Well, poverty is something that clearly still exists with us in the world. We see it here in the United States, but we see it in many countries around the world that are still grappling with the challenges of getting out of poverty. But I think it's really important to say at the beginning that a number of countries have already moved out of the levels of poverty that we saw 20 or 30 years ago. So there's been enormous progress in terms of eliminating poverty, and it is thanks to the efforts of people in their own countries, first and foremost, but it's also due to the support of people in the United States and in developed countries who've continued to provide, through organizations like CARE, considerable support to eliminating poverty in countries around the world. So there's still a huge amount to do, but great progress has been made over recent decades.
Do you think most Americans understand the kind of poverty that you have witnessed across the globe?
I'm sure most Americans have seen on TV, if they haven't traveled to developing countries themselves, or read in newspapers about some of the really most extreme cases, places that are affected by drought, places that are affected by major disasters. We think of the earthquake in Haiti. Right now in the Democratic Republic of Congo, we see people affected by continued civil war in that country. But these are some of the most difficult places in the world that are still grappling with some very, very basic things. People without food, without shelter, without access to education and healthcare and so on. There's a large range, though, between that. That's one extreme. You have, in many developing countries, an increasing growing middle class, increasing entrepreneurships and innovation. And that really is the engine of development and of growth in many developing countries. And we're seeing it beginning to have major impacts in many countries around the world. And that's what we need to stimulate.
You know, there's poverty here, as you mentioned. There's poverty in Britain. There's poverty in every Western industrialized nation. And there are some people who will say, you know, why are we going around the world feeding people and building houses and digging wells when we got people here in our country who are in dire straits as well? But does the poverty here and in the Western nations even come close to comparing to what we've been talking about?
I think even the worst poverty that we see here in the United States, there really is no comparison between that and what we see in some of the poorer countries around the world. Because here in the U.S., there are support systems, there are homeless shelters, there are social services available to help people that are in poverty. And there are a lot of organizations that do great work in the U.S. and other developed countries to assist those in poverty. In several developing countries, however, certainly the social services available in those countries and the economy in those countries are much weaker, and therefore there's a lot less to support people. And some of the situations, as I'm sure people have seen on the TV, are much more extreme. So there is a lot more that needs to be done. And certainly there's a role for organizations working here in the U.S., and there's a role for organizations working internationally as well. I think both are really important. We've got to tackle poverty wherever it is.
I mentioned those care packages that we used to hear about on TV back in the 50s and 60s a lot. CARE delivered hundreds of millions of care packages all over the world, all over the years. But you've actually phased that out several years ago to focus on this a new strategy, a long-term project offering sustainable solutions to poverty. And you alluded to a second ago to people coming out of poverty thanks to things like this, entrepreneurship, growing middle class. Is that what led to it, your organization and other organizations like yours, changing their focus from giving things to people to helping them pull themselves up?
Well, we certainly continue to support people that are affected, for example, by natural disasters, where they do need a handout. Mm-hmm. So we certainly are still in the work of providing emergency relief to people that need it. But what we've found in other organizations like CARE is that you really need to understand and grapple with the underlying causes of poverty, because if you want to have some sustainable impact, then you've got to tackle those underlying causes of poverty, and that means a longer-term approach. That means looking at issues such as education, enabling people to have access to markets, improving productivity, whether it be agricultural, whether it be in urban settings. You've got to look at those underlying issues that will enable people to improve their situation in a sustainable way. And so increasingly, organizations like CARE are very much focusing on those longer-term issues that we need to address. And again, we're seeing many places over the years where we've had considerable success and impact in that respect.
Is that a new idea in terms of being new in the last several decades, or was it something that we always knew but we had to get to a certain place before we could start to implement that idea?
I think, you know, many of the international charities like CARE, we did start focused on relief, focused on handouts. CARE started at the end of the Second World War with the care packages that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But as I think probably, you know, quite early on in the 60s and 70s, certainly, the focus shifted very much to tackling some of the longer term and underlying causes of poverty. And we continue to do both. We continue to support people if they are affected by emergencies. But we do focus primarily on working with women and girls and their communities in helping to bring them out of poverty in a long-term and sustainable way.
I was just going to bring that up. You're working alongside women and girls in most poverty-stricken areas. Why do you focus on them as opposed to men and boys or entire populations, regardless of gender?
You know, there's a lot of interesting research and analysis that's been done over the years that show that your greatest impact on poverty in a family and in a community is to work through the women and the girls. Women tend to focus more on supporting their family, on supporting the education of their kids, on ensuring that the household improves its livelihood. And it's one of the highest leverages that you can have is to focus on supporting women and girls in their development, help them get access to education and healthcare and economic opportunity, and that will have a huge impact on the community as a whole. Now, that doesn't mean you exclude men and boys. We still work with them, but we have found that this primary focus on working with women and girls really has the greatest impact and helps to empower women and girls also to play an equal part in their communities.
At first blush, this does not bode well for men. It doesn't put us in the best light, because there's some other things that CARE is involved in, including financial transactions and helping women get access to capital that seem to be very successful and help lift entire communities to a new level of economic success. Maybe not the kind of success that we experience, but it's a start. And yet it's being done with women. Is there something fundamentally wrong with men?
Well, I'm certainly not the right person to answer that question. But no, I mean, we just know that when you look at where the most impact is, and of course, we're working with men and boys a lot. They play a very important role in the development in their communities. It obviously varies a lot between communities and cultures and societies and so on. But there is, women always have this instinct to care for the development of their families and their communities. And that's something that is very powerful. And so working with and through them, often that includes working with the husbands and the sons as well. But really focusing on women. And also, women are more than 50% of the world's population, mm-hmm. and they are often the most marginalized as well. And so this is also an effort to promote a level of equality that often does not exist traditionally in some of the societies we're working in. So, there are multiple reasons why this is important. So it is about, promoting equality. It is also about where we're seeing we can have the most impact.
Well, given that marginalization, that traditional marginalization of women in many of these societies and the patriarchal nature of some of these societies where women have very few, if any, rights, how does this go over when suddenly they are the entrepreneurs? They are controlling not just the purse strings but the direction of the community at large?
Well, we're working in ways that is, obviously not setting up the women against the man, if you like.
Okay.
So very much part of our approach is to certainly empower and support women in their development, but do it in a way that also brings along the men and boys in the family as well. A great example of the work that we do with women is our village savings and loans schemes that we have in many countries, particularly in Africa, where we work with groups of women, often women who have very little else. They're marginalized. They often own no land, no significant property. And they're just eking out a living from day to day. And what we found with these very simple savings and loans schemes that we get a group of women together, they do peer lending, essentially, so they lend to each other, and they use that money to do small economic activities. They pay interest on the loans that they take, and that interest goes back to their group, to their community. And so over time, the capital that they have in their savings and loans schemes grows, and they begin to have access to more capital to increase their economic activity. These are very small scale, but we've found they have tremendous impact, and we're working with thousands of them across Africa, and it's something we've been doing for close to 30 years.
I think 26
huge
years.
Impact.
Where does the seed money for these savings and loans come from? I only have about 20 seconds.
The seed money, we certainly provide some of that in some situations, but also women themselves put in some savings, the little amounts that they may have.
We have to take a break. John Mitchell is our guest, Chief Operating Officer of CARE USA. We're going to come back and talk about technology and the role it can play in changing the economic prospects of those in poverty. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Children's Choir, presenting Christmas Gloria with the Children's Choir and Youth Chorale, Saturday, 7 p.m., Myers Park Baptist Church. Tickets available at charlottechildrenschoir.org. And The Secret Chocolatier, a family of chocolatiers, providing holiday treats, ginger and cinnamon truffles, pumpkin bonbons, peppermint bark, and more, located at Providence Road in Sharon Amity. TheSecretChocolatier.com. Lots of folks believe it will be years before they personally experience any impact from climate change, but doctors and scientists say it is harming our health right now, and it will only get worse. It's not just the increase in violent weather, but also things like pest-borne diseases on the rise, allergies, asthma, even cardiovascular disease, stroke, cancer. The risk to our health from the changing climate, tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, new health insurance exchanges are supposed to help millions of Americans get affordable coverage by 2014. Understanding what the exchanges mean for employers and consumers.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. John Mitchell is our guest. He's the COO of Care USA. He will actually be in town tomorrow at noon to speak under the auspices of the World Affairs Council of Charlotte at the Westin Hotel. As usual, those are open to the public. All you have to do is check our website at WFAE.org for more information about how you can attend what he's talking about. And what he's going to be talking about, what he's going to be talking about is technology and how technology can be and is being used to raise people out of poverty. What kind of technology are we talking about?
A lot of the technology we're using is around cell phones and tablets. I was brought up in Kenya, as you mentioned at the beginning, Mike, and I remember in Kenya the landline system, the land telephone line system was horrible, and really didn't provide good communications in that country. What we've found with the advent of cell phone technology is that countries like Kenya have leapfrogged. They've just forgotten about landlines, and they've gone straight to mobile technology. You now have more than 5 billion cell phones in Africa.
Can you explain that to me? Because this is happening around the world, and it fascinates me because landline technology is old technology and therefore relatively cheap, it would seem to me. And cell phone technology is not cheap necessarily, and you got to put up cell towers every couple of miles to get a signal out. How can that be? How has that taken off where landline, which has been around for 100 years, has not?
I think the problem with landlines is you've got to string all those lines all over the country, and that never really worked, and they were never maintained sufficiently. So I think that's really what broke down with the landline technology. Cell phone technology, I think, in many ways is much simpler in the sense you just put a tower every few miles, and you've got the coverage, and then obviously people need to have their own cell phones. So, in many ways, it's a much simpler technology to maintain and manage in some of these developing countries that we're talking about. But it really has taken off, and what we're using it for, this is one of our main examples, is for these village and savings groups that we have, where people can use the cell phone to transfer money that they've saved or to transfer money to get their loan into a bank account through the use of, through transferring a credit on their cell phone.
Yeah, and you say essentially that Africa is blazing a trail in these financial access innovation through the use of cell phone technology. They're way ahead of us in many ways, aren't they?
I think they are, and it's really interesting. I mean, we have a partnership in Kenya with a bank called Equity Bank and a cell phone company called Orange. And what we're seeing there is working with them with many of these village savings and loans and working with them to develop the applications, the apps, to transfer those credits. And it's in the interest of the bank because it gives them access to this vast number of people that currently really have no banking access and often are miles away from the nearest bank. It's in the interest of the cell phone companies because they get greater use of their cell phone network. And it's obviously in the interests of an organization like CARE, where we're trying to use these sorts of technologies to help to further development and to help the poor people that we're focusing on.
I keep reading articles about this coming soon to a cell phone near you in this country. But in Africa, that's how business is being conducted right now, and they've been doing it evidently for a while. Mobile money. They use cell phones, as you say, to buy things in a transaction in which no cash changes hands. So why has that caught on there, and why is it more effective in changing individual economic prospects than more traditional methods of commerce have been?
I think it is because of the lack of access in many rural communities across Africa. Roads are not very good. Landlines don't work. Your nearest bank is a long way away. The cell phone is something you can carry with you and enables you to do things. And people were not hung up on previous technologies. I think this whole point about leapfrogging to a new technology, it just somehow has clicked with many communities in Africa that are saying, oh yeah, great, you know, I can use my cell phone not only to talk to my family members who may be in another part of the country, I can also use it to make commercial transactions. I can also use it to find out information. You see farmers using cell phone technology to check into prices on the market for the produce that they may be selling or for the feed for their livestock and so on. So, again, these sorts of technologies, I mean, we're using them here in the United States, but they're being now increasingly used in developing countries as well.
Well, I think you make an interesting point about not being hung up on previous technologies, and that's one part of it. But the other part, it seems to me, is that a cell phone, a smartphone, it is literally the whole world in your hand. If you have a 4G or a 3G connection to the internet through your cell phone provider in Africa, you literally have the world in your hand. Whereas before they were completely isolated, we have newspapers and television and magazines and libraries and access. We've always had this. They have not. And so suddenly they can catch up. Is that essentially what's going on here?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It's a way of connecting people to many of the things that we've taken for granted, and suddenly the cell phone provides that opportunity for people to connect to information, to commercial activities, and so on.
Yeah, Dr. Jeffrey Sachs, who's director of Columbia University's Earth Institute, says the mobile phone is the most powerful technology for ending poverty in the world today. And CARE says that cell phones can bring opportunities for financial stability, health, education, and more to remote areas of the world. That's a big statement, that it's the most powerful technology ever for ending poverty.
Yes, I think it is. I think it really has enabled development organizations like CARE to working with the communities that we do to do this leapfrogging, to really do a step change in the way that we think about opportunities for people that are facing poverty. We've been struggling with sort of traditional technologies for many years and you know, building water systems, building schools, those sorts of things remain very important things that we need to focus on. But what the cell phone has done is bring a step change opportunity to the work that we do.
So it facilitates communication, obvious telephone communication, and even text messaging communication and email communication over large, vast expanses of underdeveloped land where there aren't good roads. It allows financial transactions to take place in that situation. You mentioned that farmers are using it to check crop prices and things like that. Are doctors and even villagers searching the net on their smartphones to find out what's wrong with their child who may be having a fever? Are they being used in classrooms to give access to information that they don't have because they don't have textbooks?
That is certainly beginning. I think there's a lot more that can be done in some of those areas. But certainly if you think about the obvious things, access to healthcare, if you have an emergency and you need to call for some help, that's an obvious thing you can do with a cell phone. Talking to your doctor, accessing information when you're at school. We are seeing, for example, cell phone technology being used also to collect data such as nutrition data in communities. So, you know, we will have health workers that are out in communities collecting data and sending it back so that we can monitor the nutrition status or the health status of communities. So it's also being used as a tool for the development worker in addition to the communities that they're helping.
Talk to me about cost and practicality, because smartphones are not inexpensive. They're expensive. They're at least a couple of $100, and they actually cost far more than we pay for them in the Western world, because we subsidize the cost of them through our data plans and monthly bill. How do these people afford this, and how quickly do they take to it, and how do they charge them? Many of these communities don't have electricity.
Right. Well, I should say that many of the phones that people are using in developing countries, not necessarily smartphones. There's a whole range, as there is here. You can buy a pretty cheap cell phone in most countries, really just a few dollars to get the basic cell phone. And then people tend to pay as you go. So they basically charge their phone. They put money into their phone to get a credit, as opposed to having, you know, monthly call plans or whatever. So that tends to be the norm in most poorer communities. The other thing in terms of charging in electricity is that you will find often in most villages that there is someone has a generator, even if there isn't mains electricity supply. And people are very entrepreneurial. So someone who has a generator will actually charge a very small fee, a few pennies, to people to charge their cell phones and charge up their batteries. And you also see the use of things like solar panels as another way of charging phones.
But what about these? Tablets are not cheap. You mentioned tablets. Young people are using computers in these villages to learn on and to have access to the rest of the world. Are these being given away? Are they buying them at a lower price than we can afford than we can buy them here? Or how is it working?
I would say that computers it varies. Certainly, if you go to middle class areas in developing countries, you see extensive use of computers and tablets and so on. In poorer parts of those countries, computers are still not there. Largely, there are now efforts to develop very low-cost, simple computers and to provide them to schools in poorer parts of developing countries. So that is certainly happening, but I would say it's still quite a ways to go before all schools and all communities have access to computers or to tablets. We're using tablets, for example, for some of our development workers who are using them, as I mentioned, the example earlier of collecting data about some of our programs. But they're not generally used in the communities themselves.
You've also, and we've talked about this in the last few minutes, you have described cell phone technology as connecting the vast bottom of the pyramid of consumers to financial institutions and services, even though they have no access to traditional brick-and-mortar banks. In this country, banks don't seem to care much about small customers. With the small savings accounts, they want the big fish. And everything you do with a cell phone, unless you have a significant amount of money in the bank, is going to be an extra charge for you to use that service. That dynamic is completely different over there. Is this something that we could learn from Africa and utilize to help low-income people better their lives in this country?
If you look at the population spread in many countries, the largest proportion of people are at that bottom of the pyramid, if you like, in many countries. And so if you think about it from a corporate growth perspective, where can you have your growth? Yes, you can have growth at the top of the pyramid with the richer segments of society, but there's a huge potential to focus on that bottom of the pyramid There are very many people. They may not have a lot of economic power individually, but if you put them together collectively, they have a huge potential in terms of economic growth. And they're also people that are eager to engage in the market economy more. They are obviously poor, and they are looking for opportunities. And so I think, you know, you've got kind of two sides there that potentially can fit together in terms of opportunities for economic growth. So many businesses we're finding are focusing now increasingly on that bottom of the pyramid.
John Mitchell is Chief Operating Officer of CARE USA. He's speaking tomorrow at noon at the World Affairs Council of Charlotte luncheon at the Westin Hotel. Information on our website. If you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE, that's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. CARE, as we have said, is using mobile technology to do all kinds of things, including helping farmers streamline inventory needs and give them better access to seeds and fertilizers and livestock feeds and things like that, and also to help them time the market, when to take their crops and their livestock to market, because they can check the prices on their cell phone. Was there a steep learning curve for this, or is this something they'd always been doing in very rudimentary ways, and suddenly this new technology allows them to fast-track everything?
I can give an example from Egypt, where we were working with poor farmers in rural areas of Egypt for many years, and we were doing many of the traditional things that a development organization has been doing, which has certainly had an impact, which is to introduce improved seeds, improved fertilizers, those sorts of things. And that was certainly making progress. But suddenly, when you started looking at, so what are the underlying issues that a poor farmer is dealing with in that situation in Egypt, you'll find out that they're often selling their crops when the prices are low, they're buying feed when the prices are high, all those sorts of timing issues and so on. And often they're being ripped off by middlemen as well. And so once we did that sort of analysis and realized that these were some of the issues that were actually stopping farmers from being able to move forward, it was clear that using technology such as cell phones was an obvious way to break through that. I mean, obviously, we needed to wait for the technology to be there. What the technology has enabled us to do is to begin to grapple with issues that otherwise were difficult to deal with before the technology came along.
Has anyone given any thought to building a website that facilitates these kinds of changes, these transactions in a really fair way to ensure, kind of like a Travelocity or a Priceline for farmers in poor areas, so that you can put farmers together with markets in a fair way? Has anybody thought about doing that? Is there an app for that, I guess, is the question.
I'm not sure if there's an app, but I know that we, and again, using that example from Egypt, the farmers groups that we're working with there, they've formed a bigger association. That association, we've helped them develop a website which gives them links to the information they need. So that is a real example where we have used the web as a way of getting farmers together to get access to information. And the potential for doing that sort of thing in other settings is huge, as you can imagine.
John Mitchell is COO of CARE USA. We're going to take a break and come back with more on how technology is improving the fortunes of people in poverty-stricken areas around the world, and kind of a new way to bring people out of poverty, not a handout, but a way to make them self-sufficient. We're taking a break. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Scott Jaguar, offering drivers the combination of classic Jaguar performance with advanced automotive technologies. Information on the Jaguar experience online at scottjag.com or at Scott Jaguar at I-77 and Tybola. And Theater Charlotte presenting A Christmas Carol, the Dickens holiday classic with Ebenezer Scrooge and the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. Friday through the 16th. Tickets at carolinaticks.org. New health insurance exchanges are supposed to help millions of Americans get affordable coverage by 2014. Diane Rehm and her guests talk about what the exchanges will mean for employers and consumers. That's in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation with John Mitchell, now's the time, 704-926-9323. That's 704-926-WFAE, 1-800-603-WFAE, or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
As 2012 draws to a close, we want to thank you for listening to and supporting WFAE. Please ensure the programming you rely on to keep you informed is here for you in 2013 by making your tax-deductible investment now. Call 704-549-9000 or give at WFAE.org. Pledge by midnight, December 31st, and you'll be automatically entered to win a trip to the Azores. No pledge is necessary to enter, but we hope you'll support WFAE. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. John Mitchell, the COO of CARE USA, joins us today from Atlanta in advance of a visit tomorrow at the World Affairs Council of Charlotte's luncheon at the Westin Hotel. You can make reservations for that at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Josh on Twitter asks, are literacy efforts needed in some communities before CARE's impact takes effect, before these technological changes can take effect? Because I read an article yesterday about this, saying that the young kids are surfing the web and learning how to use computers in a language, typing words that they don't understand because they don't speak English, to get to places that they use to be educated. How does all this work?
Yeah, it's a great question. Thanks, Josh. Certainly some level of basic literacy, obviously, you know, you need to be able to type in the letters or numbers in your phone to get it to work. But it's true that that's about it. You don't need a lot more than that. You know, we've been running, for example, these women savings and loans groups without literacy, with illiterate groups, where they use basically different colored bags to put the money, whether it's a loan or whether it's savings or whatever it might be. So you can do a lot of the development activities we're doing without a great deal of literacy. But certainly when it gets to using the cell phone, you obviously need some basic ability to at least know what what the words are. But it's true that there are these examples of people typing in words that they don't really understand. We focus a lot also as CARE on education because, again, as we're looking at underlying causes of poverty, education is absolutely critical. So whether it's basic literacy or whether it's ensuring that girls get access to school, those sorts of things, that's another really important thing that we focus on.
You're also using I want to get back to the microloans, the banking by phone, which is kind of interesting in that part of the world. And we've heard a lot in the last 10 years about microloans being made to these poverty-stricken areas. And the rate of payback is remarkably successful. It's almost 100%. Are they finding that to be the case with these kinds of loans that are facilitated by cell phone technology?
Yes, absolutely. What happens with this approach to savings and loans is that if you think about it traditionally, people may have had access to loans, but through loan sharks. And so they were getting ripped off. They were having to pay huge amounts of interest, and they got no benefit at the end of it. If you get a group of women together and once you go through the basic orientation about these savings and loan schemes, people get it. They really understand. I mean, first of all, they understand the need for the money, whether it's the loan or whether it's the savings. They understand that concept. And the real power of it is the peer group pressure that happens with a group of women that are working together to save money and to loan money to each other. And so there is a real sense of pride by people to do their part to make sure they repay their loan on time and support each other when they need it in terms of providing loans to others. So that's a very powerful thing, and we're seeing, and we have seen for many years extremely high return rates on these microloan programs. And that's the same with the use of cell phone. That doesn't change that way that the groups work together and provide peer pressure.
Now, CARE is using, I'm told, this mobile technology in other ways other than simply facilitating financial transactions. You are capturing data like the weight and measurements of children. Why is that important?
We have programs where we're focusing on child nutrition, for example, and clearly for us to be able to monitor how the children are doing, often in highly dispersed communities, is very important to our work. So being able to use, again, cell phone technology or tablet technology for the field worker to go out there, collect the data, and then just send it back through over the web or through an email, that just makes our work so much more efficient. So it's a great way of improving the efficiency and effectiveness of the work that we do.
You're also producing videos, I'm told, and pushing them out to smartphones and tablets. What are the topics of these videos, and how do they help in the fight to raise people up?
Well, we can use videos, obviously, for education, for teaching people how to use these loan funds, for teaching for health messages, for messages about ensuring that girls go to school. There's a number of ways that you can use videos and messages to really help in the development process that organizations like CARE are involved in.
Now, it's not just CARE. You point out that poverty is complex and that partnerships are key to overcoming it, and that you actually seek out these partnerships. Where do you go looking?
We work with a variety of partners, but I would like to focus a little bit on our work with increasing work with corporate partners.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking earlier about the huge economic potential, growth potential at the bottom of the pyramid, and many businesses are seeing that. They're seeing that, wow, you know, there's millions of people out there that they may have small amounts of economic potential individually, but collectively they really provide an opportunity for growth. And also, because they are the base of that pyramid, if you like, they provide the engine for development often in the country more generally, that if you can develop the people at the bottom, that obviously pushes up and improves development across the country. Corporations see that.
Not unlike the argument that's being made by some in the middle class in this country, that it is the middle class that built America after World War II into what we know it today, and that unless you have a thriving middle class, you don't have a thriving America. And you're pretty much saying the same thing. I mean, you're talking about lower socioeconomic values here, but you have to start somewhere.
That's right. And, of course, it's not to say that you shouldn't work with other strata in society as well, but what corporations are seeing in developing countries is that there is huge potential. They are interested in expanding their markets. They want to do it in socially responsible ways. So they want to see how, if they can expand their market share, they can also do it in ways that actually assist in the process of overcoming poverty. So we're working with a number of partners like that. I can give an example of our work with Kraft Foods. We're working with them in cocoa, working with farmers that are producing cocoa. So we worked with the cocoa farmers to pilot and test new production techniques, to give them access to different fertilizers, those sorts of things, and find ways that we can increase their income. And doing that with the support of Kraft Foods, that obviously sees the benefit of the farmers that are providing their raw commodity, the cocoa, to them, as in their interest as well. So we're looking for those places where there's a mutual interest. There's an interest by the corporation in expanding their access to commodities or their markets, and also where there is an interest by CARE, because of our poverty-fighting work, to be able to use these opportunities mm-hmm. to increase economic activity.
So you have these cocoa farmers who are being what? Given access to technology or access to information about how to increase and improve the both the quantity and the quality of the crop that they then sell to Kraft? Is that essentially what's happening here?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So what does Kraft provide to the equation? What are they doing?
They provide funding. They also provide some of the technical advice. So, I mean, they are experts in cocoa production. So they can provide that technical assistance to the farmers, and they can provide funding for the work that our community development staff are doing in working with those farming groups.
And who started this idea? Who got Kraft to do this? Is this something that Kraft wanted to do and they looked for a way to do it? Or you at CARE and other NGOs said, you know, it might be a good idea if, and then you went to the corporations?
Well, it could happen either way, and it depends on the situation. I'm not sure exactly how the relationship with Kraft began, but certainly in many countries we will be focusing on a particular group, in this case farmers who are growing cocoa, and we'll see that there is a corporation that's also working in that area. But it could go the other way as well. We could be contacted by a corporation that comes to CARE and says, we'd like to see how we can partner with you in doing this sort of work. Another example I've given in Bangladesh, we were working with extremely poor, marginalized women in many parts of Bangladesh, in the rural areas, in some of the more remote areas of the country, that had very little economic opportunity. And we were doing work with them to see how they could improve their economic activities. And at the same time, we saw that there were corporate partners who wanted to expand their market to those rural areas. And so we now have a partnership with Danone, the yogurt company, for example, that's providing support to the development of these women's groups across rural Bangladesh, who become then salespeople for products that are sold in those communities. And it's in, again, where there's mutual interest. It's in the interest of the women. It gives them an opportunity for employment. It enables market goods to get into communities where they were not previously able to do so. And obviously, it offers an opportunity for a corporation that has that social interest as well to be able to expand their market.
CARE also points out to businesses that there are benefits of doing this, of participating in partnerships that help the poor, because ultimately, and this is a quote, corporations that turn their attention to these growing markets now will be well poised for growth moving forward. That's a basic business strategy, I suppose, but it also has the potential for being exploitive. How do you balance the good with the bad? How do you bring these Western corporations who are trying to get the most money, the biggest bang for the buck, so to speak? Yes, they'll be helping people rise out of poverty, I suppose. But then we also have situations like that that clothing factory that went up in flames with everybody locked inside. I mean, that was a way to bring people out of poverty as well, but it ended in disaster. How do you balance the good with the bad? How do you police it?
Yeah, sure. Well, we are very careful with the partnerships that we form. We make sure that there is fundamentally a shared set of values and principles about the work. So we work with corporations that are socially responsible, that take, for example, in the case of factory workers, that take care of their workers properly and provide safe environments for them to work in. We would not work with corporations that don't do that. So we are very careful in selecting partners where there are some common interests, obviously, first and foremost, and where we believe that the corporate partners have the interests of the poor people that we're working with as part of their objectives as well. And that's the most important thing. And so we're looking for those common objectives and something that will further the interests of the poor people that we are serving.
When this technology begins to arrive in these heretofore cut-off areas of the world, and they begin to use it to improve education, to improve their economic prospects, to improve their access to commerce and leveling the playing field, so to speak. Does it kind of snowball over time? Does it always snowball over time, or are there instances where it sputters and dies?
There are certainly failures. There are certainly times and cases where an innovation, an idea, doesn't go very far, and then we need to look at an alternative, a better way of doing things. But we are seeing many of the programs like these village savings and loans associations, for example, those are highly successful. And we've seen often these groups then form associations with other groups. And we had a program in Kenya that I was involved in several years ago that, for example, then spun off and became its own rural bank. So we're seeing many cases where once you get the right type of intervention and innovations, things really do take off. And I think key to it is ensuring that people themselves have control of their development process and the benefits are accruing back to them. Those sorts of models for development take off and snowball.
There was an article in, I think, the December 2010 Boston Review that was pretty much about telecenters in places like India being economic engines and helping to raise people out of poverty. But it concentrated really on the downside of all of that, because they said that new technologies generate optimism and exuberance, which is eventually dashed by disappointing realities, and that technology, no matter how well designed, is only a magnifier of human intent and capacity, not a substitute. And that if you have a foundation of competent, well-intentioned people, then the appropriate technology can amplify their capacity and lead to amazing achievements. You would agree with that?
I think largely, yes. I think clearly technology is not a panacea in itself, but it is a major lever that if we use it correctly, it can really have an impact on poverty.
John Mitchell, the Chief Operating Officer of CARE USA, using technology now in poverty-stricken areas of the world with success to improve people's financial and outcomes and their quality of life. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.